I'm Joshua P. Warren, and this is the Speaking of Strange Report. Today's date is November the 15th of 2016. I promised you an exciting Speaking of Strange report, and I am delivering. First off, this report is brought to you by Miller High Life. When I decide to go out for a night on the town in Asheville, I shower my hose with Miller High Life, the champagne of beer. Now, on to the program, segment one. You know, I've got some great ghost stories for you. Some that are chilling, some that might give you some goosebumps, all true. Before I get to that, though, I want to say right up front that, as you may or may not know, for several years, I have occasionally given classes in paranormal investigation here in Asheville. They've always done very well. They've been extremely popular. We sell out. People have a great time. They learn a lot. And frankly, I make friends for life. But there are a lot of people who email me every single year, all around the country, from all over the world, really, saying, I would like to take classes and learn about paranormal investigation, learn about ghosts, spirits, hauntings, UFOs, aliens, cryptids, ESP, magic, time travel, all that stuff. But I can't make it to Asheville. Will you please offer this online? So I finally decided to do that. I'm going to be teaching some online classes this February. They will be live and interactive on the internet. And if you can't catch one live, well, then you'll be sent a private recording so you can watch that class that you missed. And, hey, at the end of it, you'll get a test, and if you pass that test, you'll get a certification. I'm taking enrollment right now if you would like to sign up for my classes. You just have to go to either my main website, joshuapwarren.com, or warreninstitute.com, that's fine. But if you sign up right now, you will save money, because the sooner you sign up, the more money you save, and this is considered the early enrollment period. So, again, best bet is just to go to joshuapwarren.com. There is no period after the P, and click the link there. Well, the month of October was one of the wildest months that I've had in a while. The things that happened in October got so much attention that it ended up on the front page of the Asheville Citizen Times, which is the big newspaper here in Asheville, North Carolina. It ended up in the Mountain Express, which is the big weekly entertainment magazine here. It ended up on the ABC News affiliate, WLOS News 13. It was in the Biltmore Beacon. It was all over the place what happened here. And so you may have seen some of that media, but that doesn't mean that you really are getting the whole story. In fact, I don't think any of the media covered the entire story, so I'm going to do my best to give it to you right now. So there is a building that is in West Asheville that for many, many years was the Barbecue Inn restaurant, and that building has now been renovated and turned into the Bayerisch House and Pub, which is a German and basically European-inspired restaurant. Bayerisch is spelled B-Y-R-I-S-H, and house, in this instance, is spelled H-A-U-S. So it's the Bayerisch House and Pub. Now, I first became involved with this place because of a call I got from Mobius. You see, people contact me all the time asking me to investigate a private residence. And so I frequently go to private places and do investigations. But I can't talk about those. I mean, the people who own those places, they like their privacy. And so, you know, they don't want their property to turn into a circus or whatever. So I really pay attention when there is something happening at a place that is publicly oriented, and that it's possible for people to actually go there and participate. So I got this call from Mobius. He tells me about this restaurant. He has friends who work there, and you know, the renovation has that stirred up all kinds of paranormal activity. Employees wanting to quit their jobs because they were seeing objects flying around in the kitchen, because they were seeing the apparition of a man sitting in the booths. Some people were getting shoved or tapped on the shoulder. Tables, or actually chairs, being turned over. I mean, some pretty freaky stuff. So I went over there to the Byrish House and Pub, and I started interviewing people and verifying that people were having these experiences. And then I started taking measurements, and I found all kinds of bizarre electromagnetic fluctuations around the property that were not connected to anything artificial, things that I could not explain. But I had no doubt people were experiencing things, and I was measuring weird stuff, but I couldn't really figure out why. Like, what's going on here? Was there a battle that took place here? You know, why would this place be so active? So I got in touch with my great friend Vance Pollock, who is the absolute best forensic historian in the entire world. I mean, this guy, you've probably heard him on Speaking of Strange over the years. He just has a synchronistic knack for being able to go into any scenario and research it and find all the little dots and connect them and give you a very rich and nuanced profile of the history of a place or a person. So I brought in Vance, and he went to work. And here is essentially what we found out right up front. We found out that that property, as far as we can tell, never had any kind of a major dramatic or traumatic or violent sort of history. It seemed to just be a piece of overgrown land at the edge of a forest, really, up until the late 1950s. And that is when a man named Gus Cools, K-O-O-L-E-S, Gus Cools, purchased that property. And he constructed the building and opened the restaurant around 1960 that was the Barbecue Inn. And it was the most popular barbecue joint in Asheville for generations. Finally, Gus Cools died. His family took over, and they ran it for many years. And then, for whatever reason, the place went out of business. It sat there abandoned for years. And then it was purchased. And it was first opened up as a place called the public house, which that didn't do very well. And then everything switched around, and more renovations were done, and then it opened up as the current establishment, the Byrish House and Pub. So there wasn't anything too amazing, really, about that particular story. But Vance was able to realize that Gus Cools had a colleague in the restaurant business in Asheville who was also named Gus. Except this man's name was Gus Adler. Now, Gus Adler had a much more interesting story. You see, Gus Adler was from Germany, but he was a German Jew. And I bring that up for a very particular reason. I'll get to that in a minute. He came to Asheville, and he decided to open up Asheville's very first German restaurant. He went to a big, beautiful building on the side of Bowcatcher Mountain, which most people now think of as the Sky Club, which is a name it picked up at one point. And he created this German restaurant there called the Heidelberg, the old Heidelberg restaurant. And it did well at first, but the timing, as it turns out, was really bad, because this was in the late 1930s. And as it became clearer and clearer that the United States was to soon become engaged in war with the Germans, anything German became very unpopular. I mean, people weren't even eating sauerkraut, you know, because of it. And people started to spread nasty rumors about him and his business. They started to vandalize things. Now, the funny thing is, again, he was a German Jew. He certainly had no love for the Nazis. But at that time, people didn't understand enough about the nuances of all that, and they didn't realize that. So he was treated, unfortunately, very badly in this community in Asheville. And his restaurant, the Heidelberg, failed. It went out of business. He was never able to get properly back on his feet again. He descended into severe alcoholism. And then finally, one night, Gus Adler went to bed in a little cottage near the building that housed his restaurant at one time. He got into bed by himself with a cigarette, and he dozed off to sleep. And when he woke up, that mattress was on fire, and he had already breathed in so much smoke he was barely conscious. And so Gus Adler flopped over onto his hands and knees, and he crawled toward the bathroom, where we can imagine he felt he might have better ventilation. But he never made it to the bathroom, because when they found him dead on his hands and knees, it was obvious that he was heading in that direction, but the smoke finally overcame him. What a tragic life, and a tragic ending to that life. So I became curious about the connection that Gus Adler had, potentially, to the property. And I started talking to people who had seen the ghosts. And if you look at some of the newscasts that were done, and if you haven't seen any of the newscasts, I'll put a link to those newscasts in my e-newsletter. That you can sign up for at joshuapwarren.com, or you can just go onto the internet and type in Byrish House, and it'll probably come up, B-Y-R-I-S-H, Byrish House, and maybe even ghost. But these witnesses, they're talking about how the ghost appears. And I quickly realized, for one thing, the ghost looks like Gus Adler. I show them a picture of Gus Adler, and they said, yeah, that's the guy. Furthermore, some of the big activity at the Byrish House really started picking up when they added in the fire pits and the candles. And so there was a lot of circumstantial evidence that maybe this was Gus Adler haunting the place, which is a very interesting concept because, for one thing, you can imagine this is a guy who opened up Asheville's first real European restaurant. He was really treated poorly. He died tragically, so maybe it's possible that he is still hanging around to see Asheville's newest German and European-inspired restaurant in this new and different day and age to see how it's going to fare. I mean, it possibly makes sense, but one of the most amazing things about all this is that, if so, that brings up the idea of the traveling ghost. That, you know, we have this misconception that a ghost must stay at one place where something tragic happened, but that's just an imprint, you see. There are two different types of ghosts. You have the imprints, which are like something that's been recorded in the environment that replays itself under certain circumstances, and then you have the entity, which presumably has some kind of free will. And on the level of an entity, maybe time and space don't even exist in the same way that we think of them on this scale. So, it's very possible that Gus Adler's spirit travel through time and space, not that far, really, in order to go to this new site and to observe what's happening there. So, keeping all this in mind, we decided to do a seance at the Byrish House and Pub. Now, this is not the kind of thing that I usually do. This is a special circumstance. So we got together, I believe the date was October the 19th of 2016, and boy, we had a packed house. We had people from all over the place who came to be a part of this, to either participate or observe, and to see what we might find. So we did a little investigation, and then we had a meeting room there set up for a seance, and I contacted Investigator Shelley Wright, who is, as you may know, of Wright's Coin Shop, but now has her own new magic shop called Nevermore Mystical Arts, which is right beside Wright's Coin Shop and doing extremely well, also getting a lot of media attention. I asked Shelley to help with the seance, and she brought all kinds of interesting objects, candles and divining tools, and she brought this beautiful 3D glass Ouija board. So I could go on and on about how the seance proceeded, but let me just focus on the Ouija board thing for a minute, because, you know, I've always been very, very skeptical, so to speak, when it comes to Ouija boards. And that's because I've done experiments in the past where you have two people who are using a Ouija board, they're having a lot of success, and then you blindfold them and suddenly the Ouija board starts speaking gibberish. So I don't think that a Ouija board is actually some kind of an instrument that becomes possessed in and of itself and starts giving you information. I think it's a tool that can be used to help channel the user's own sort of psychic perceptions into some sort of a visible representation. So, in other words, it's the people who are actually doing something psychic, they're tapping into something, and it's a subconscious thing, but it comes out on the board as a feedback, right? So, that said, we had this room packed with people. It was the right atmosphere, and we had meters that started going bonkers. We had a little wheel called an Elgi wheel that started spinning, and there was no explanation for why it was spinning. We didn't have any air currents that were causing that. There was a lot of stuff happening. Some people got very emotional. There was one lady there who started crying and was overcome with all these different feelings, tapping into something. And I made it very, very clear when I started the seance. I said, look, we're going to cast a wide net here. I'm not just saying we're trying to contact Gus Adler. We are interested in contacting any presence that's here that wants to come through and express him or her or itself. And I told everybody this in advance because some people are scared by that kind of thing and they don't want to be around it. But, you know, everybody was cool with it. So I didn't know what was going to happen. So all this stuff starts occurring. All the media was there documenting it objectively, and they actually all portrayed it very well in their reports. So I'm happy to say that. And I have nothing but great thanks and admiration to the media for doing it that way. And so Shelley and I decide to do our Ouija board session. So she puts her hand on the planchette, and I put my hand on the planchette, and sure enough, it starts sliding. And it goes to O, and then it slides over to H, and then it stops. That's it. That's the end of it. And we're like, O, H. Okay. What does that mean? Oh, you know, I mean, it means nothing to me. I look up, I see Vance standing there, the historian. I said, Vance, O-H, are those initials or something? And Vance goes, Josh. And he starts, I can tell he's got the goosebumps, and he goes, Josh. He said, the Sky Club, where Gus Adler opened his German restaurant was built by O.C. Hamilton. And everybody's just like, oh, you know, it was one of those moments. I'm like, seriously? You know, the guy who built that building, his initials were O.H.? And Vance says, yes. And he goes, furthermore, though, O.C. Hamilton is one of the weirdest, most mysterious figures I've ever researched. He said, O.C. Hamilton is one of those guys that doesn't have the type of paper trail the average person does. He said it's almost like he was living a double life or something. He said he was a wealthy man who was well known in Asheville, a philanthropist and whatnot, but you know, there are a lot of pieces missing about who he was. So we all thought, well, maybe we tapped into something here, obviously, and everybody had a lot to discuss the rest of the night. We had a great time. We thought it was a success. We made some headway here. But Vance, being Vance, became particularly obsessed all of a sudden, as you can understand, with, okay, who is this guy? What's up with this guy, O.C. Hamilton? So Vance decided to continue pursuing this pretty much all night long. And the next day, Vance sent me an email and he goes, Josh, I found the grave of O.C. Hamilton. Click this link to see a picture of it. I promise you, this is not a mistake. Okay. So I click the link, and the link brings up a tombstone for a man named John J. Carroll. So I email Vance back. I say, well, so you're telling me that O.C. Hamilton was John J. Carroll? He says, yep. And guess who he was? And I'm on the edge of my seat, like, tell me. Well, here's the story, folks. John J. Carroll was a Catholic priest in Chicago for over 30 years. And he was very well known and very well respected, but he fell in love with a woman named Kate Bailey. And when she became pregnant, he got her out of Chicago and brought her down to Asheville, where he told everybody his name was O.C. Hamilton. And he did indeed adopt this double identity. And he had a lot of money for some reason. And he built this big, beautiful house for her on Beaucatcher Mountain and was very generous in the community. And he pulled this off for years. He would go to Chicago and become himself, the priest, John J. Carroll. And then he would go down to Asheville and become the philanthropist and the rich guy who's a developer and whatnot named O.C. Hamilton. Amazing that he was able to do that. But he lived this lie for a good chunk of his life, and it was a big, big lie. But he pulled it off. He succeeded until he died. So that was an interesting shocker, because I thought, wow, maybe this guy, O.C. Hamilton, not only has this connection to the property, but maybe he came through because, you know, this is a guy who was a priest, and priests in the Catholic world believe in purgatory, and so maybe he's in some kind of a purgatory because that he believes in purgatory and he's trying to get out of it. So I ended up, after this, in amazement, of course, meeting with one of the owners of the Byrish House. He's a fellow who does not like publicity. I'll call him Tom. So Tom and I sat down, and he says, okay, what happened? And I tell him everything that we've discovered. And as soon as I said the name O.C. Hamilton, Tom was like, what? And he recoiled, and he started getting the goosebumps. And I thought, there's no way that he should even know that name. Vance told me that name in general was so obscure that, you know, he'd never even brought it up to me in the past. And So as soon as I said O.C. Hamilton and Tom reacted that way, I thought, well, he's probably thinking of somebody else or whatever. And Tom's like, go on. So I start telling this story to him that I just have told you, and it got to the point where I was about to say O.C. Hamilton was actually, and as I say the name John J. Carroll, Tom says that name at the same time. And now we're both freaking out. And I'm like, how could you possibly know this? Because this has not been recorded in mainstream history. How can you know this? And he says to me, listen. He says, I was raised up partially in Chicago. And he said, many years ago, Al Capone's old hideout became available on the market for sale. And he said, being a guy who develops businesses and stuff, I was interested in buying his old hideout and turning it into a speakeasy. And he said, so I got very involved with this, and I started learning all the history and all the, you know, getting involved with all the people who had an interest in that location. And he said, I found out in the process that one of the people who was very connected to Al Capone was his family priest, the man who christened his children. Folks, you want to take a guess what that priest's name was? Yeah, it was John J. Carroll, i.e. O.C. Hamilton. Now, I want you to let all that sink in for a minute. I want you to understand how all these connections fell into place. It started with activity at this restaurant, and now we've gotten to the point where through our investigation, both historically and paranormally, all this has come together. There's a connection between what's happening there and Gus Adler and O.C. Hamilton from the Heidelberg, from the Sky Club, trying to come through and communicate. Now, there are even more synchronistic things that I can give you about this story, okay? I'm just hitting the highlights here. But I will tell you that after we got this information, we decided, okay, if indeed Gus Adler is here, he probably just wants to hang out and see what's going on. But O.C. Hamilton, he needs to probably move on. I mean, again, if this guy believes in purgatory, then he may feel that he is in purgatory right now. And he needs to have his sins acknowledged and forgiven, and he needs to be allowed to move on. And so we arranged a second event in October, which was a clearing. And I had my friend from Puerto Rico, who is a Santero Longley, he came into town. We had from Coven Oldenwild, Lady Passion, and Duave. We had the whole room set up for them, and they did a blessing and a clearing, and a lot of people showed up and participated in it. And everybody seemed to feel much better afterwards. So, you know, what can I say? We brought the story out, but it's still in progress, and who knows how all this is going to end up. But for now, what I can tell you is this is a very interesting example of, once again, how what begins with some simple ghostly encounters can take you on this journey that eventually involves historians and scientific investigation, and it all comes together in order to give us a picture about something from the past that needs to be acknowledged and will help us transition into the future. I could talk forever about this story, but that's the long and the short of it. Next thing I want to tell you, if you are in the Asheville area and you are interested in visiting my museum, my museum is being renovated right now. I own the Asheville Mystery Museum, which is in the basement of the Asheville Masonic Temple. And it's been there for about 5 years. We absolutely love being in the basement of the Asheville Masonic Temple. But it's a big, big basement, and we're on one side of it right now. And we're going to shift the entire collection over to the other side of the basement. And we're doing that for two reasons. Well, actually, three, I guess. Number one, by doing so, we'll have direct access to our side of the building through a back door. Number two, we're going to have a bathroom that's there just for us and our guests. And occasionally, they might do a number two in there. And number three, we are also going to be renovating the entire basement down there and making sure, because this is an old building. I mean, it's over 100 years old, and it needs some upkeep. And so by shifting our collection to the other side of the building, we're taking the side of the building that needs to be restored most and allowing space for that to be done. So anyway, point is, if you take one of the haunted Asheville ghost tours, which run year-round, 365 days a year, we are interested in serving, but we definitely run Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and usually Thursdays, 8 p.m., rain, snow, doesn't matter. If you take one of our haunted Asheville ghost tours, they end up in the museum, but if you go to the museum between now and probably like mid-December, it's going to look pretty messy. So keep that in mind, and that's occupying a lot of my time right now while I'm in Asheville working on that. Before we go to segment two, and I've got another really interesting story for you in segment two, I also want to point out that if you are interested in the wishing machine, which of course is a box that is designed to do exactly what it sounds like, experimentally speaking, to help wishes come true. We've had people in the past who have contacted us and said, look, I want to buy a wishing machine, but I would like to buy an advanced model. What if I bought a lower cost model, and then I used it to wish for the extra money to get the advanced model? Could I send you the lower cost model back, and then you replace it with the more advanced model? And we said, yeah, sure, why not? Let's do this for now. For the month of November, we're going to do a promotion. If you buy one of the basic standard wishing machines, which are non-electrical, and then you use it literally to wish for the extra money to buy a more advanced one, when you get that extra money, you can send the lower cost wishing machine back, and then we will replace it with the more advanced model, and we'll even pay for the postage. Hopefully that's not too confusing, but we figure if people are asking for it, it's the holidays, let's give it a shot. So you can go to wishingmachineproject.com. Again, that's wishingmachineproject.com. Anytime you like this month, and again, if you buy a lower cost unit and you decide to trade it in for a higher one, we'll do that for you. It is now time for segment two of this Speaking of Strange report. Segment two, brought to you by Jägermeister. For those times when you wake up pantsless next to a pumpkin. And that's with thanks to Dave Attell. Segment two. You know, I have a lot of friends. I'm a very fortunate guy. I have a lot of wonderful friends all over the world. And many of them happen to be named Eric for some reason or another. You hear me most often talking about C. Eric Scott, my partner in crime when it comes to independent TV and film productions. We've worked together on all kinds of stuff, including the Travel Channel series Paranormal Paparazzi. But I have a relatively new friend named Eric, and, you know, he gave me his permission to use his last name on the air, but I don't think I'm going to do it. I just try to avoid that when I can. And when I met him, the first night we met, he said that he had had a ghostly experience. And I said, okay, well, that's not uncommon. You know, that happens to me pretty much every day. But he started telling me about his experience. And as he went along, it became more and more interesting. And finally, it got to the point where I guess it was when the story ended. I was like, man, that is one of the best ghost stories, like true ghost stories, I've ever heard. And that is saying a heck of a lot coming from me, because, you know, I have put together anthologies of people's creepy experiences. In fact, when I was a teenager, I did an anthology called Speaking of Strange, the namesake of this particular program. And it was all about, you know, collecting people's experiences from all over Western North Carolina that were weird and mysterious and paranormal. And now, you know, I have this book that came out a few years ago called It Was a Dark and Creepy Night, which had weird experiences from people all over the world. So it is saying a lot for me to say a story is a good one, because most of the time when somebody has a ghostly experience, it doesn't come across like a campfire story. You know, somebody's like, look, I walked into a room, I looked over, I saw a shadowy figure sitting there, it disappeared, that was it. I don't know what happened, but it freaked me out, you know. That's what you hear like 99% of the time, and that makes sense. Very seldom does somebody give you a story that's a true story, that's a verifiable story, that actually ends up like a campfire tale, where it's like there's a beginning and a middle and an end. And in the end kind of gives you that little chill, you know, down your spine. Well, he has one of those stories. And after he told me this story, and I said, man, that is such a great true ghost story. You've got to write it down, if you would please, and send it to me. And I want to do everything I can to, you know, to get the story out there if it's cool with you. And he was like, yeah, that's fine. He said, you know, I'd prefer to keep the address where this happened private. And I said, oh, I totally understand that. But he did give me the address, but I, you know, and he said I could tell you his name and everything else, but again, I'm going to be a little, I'm going to edit this a little bit as I read it to you. So he gave me this write-up of his experience. And this took place in South Carolina. And I've got it right here in front of me. And I'm going to, I'm going to call this story, he said he didn't want the address specifically, but I think I can be this specific. I'm going to call this story Christopher Lane. Okay, I think he'll be okay with that. So basically, my friend Eric, in August of 2000, he bought this really nice house in South Carolina. Nice house with a pool on Christopher Lane. That was the name of the road. He said that the people I'm looking in at his story. He says the people I was buying the place from was a couple who were splitting. He says I never met the woman, but the man showed me the house and told me they raised show dogs in the back room at one point, and they had also done some dog grooming. So Eric here, he liked this place. And I'm going to kind of go back and forth again, telling you, summarizing some things, and then I'll read some quotes. So as Eric is looking at this house, he says, and this is a quote, "The man who lived next door saw that I was looking at the house. And he came over and asked me how serious I was about buying the place. And I told him I was very serious. And he said that he used to live there," end quote. So just keep that in mind. The next door neighbor used to live there, apparently. He also said the people that he was buying the place from seemed like they might have been related to the neighbor somehow. But he didn't, you know, Eric didn't know exactly what was going on. So anyway, he says, quote, "The first night I spent in the house, my living room furniture did not get delivered, nor did my bed. So I built a fire in the fireplace, and I spent the night in the living room in my sleeping bag. He said, I had this strange, almost lucid dream that something was in the hallway and trying to tell me something, but it couldn't quite communicate. It didn't tell me, but I sensed somehow that it couldn't leave the hallway and enter the living room. And then he says, quote, I woke up, and immediately I heard distinct footsteps on the linoleum down the hallway and into the back bedroom. It freaked me out. He said, I grew up in the country church, and I didn't believe in ghosts or such things at the time. And he said it freaked him out so much that he left and decided to spend the rest of the night with his parents. So he said then, says, my furniture arrived finally, and my friend spent the night, and he told me he had the same dream. A few days later, another friend and his wife spent the night because they'd lost power at their place, and they both had the same dream as well. Eric said at some point he had one of his relatives, his cousin, who is a scientist, come over and visit. And he said that he told his cousin about this story, about the footsteps that people were hearing, and that occasionally he'd also seen some shadows moving in the hallway. His cousin walked into the back bedroom and said, if there's a ghost back here, I'm going to catch it in a jar and study it. And right as he said that, the pantry door popped open right in front of him. Eric said it had a latch you had to slide open, and we tried the latch over and over and never could get it to pop open like it did on that occasion. He goes on to say here, I never used that linoleum room. I stored some stuff in the closet, but that was it. He says, whenever I went in, it, I always felt like something was wrong and I wasn't supposed to be there. He said his brother would come and stay once in a while. Sure enough, you could always hear footsteps on the linoleum. Now, I mentioned to you that this place had a pool. And he said at some point, he met some friends and invited them over for drinks and to swim in the pool. And one of the ladies was looking through his window, and she came over and she said to him, oh, you didn't tell me you had kids. And he said, well, I don't have kids. And she says, well, yeah, I saw a kid. Saw a kid out there by the pool. He said, there was no kid anywhere around. At one point, they were by the pool, said, yeah, I saw a kid looking through the blinds. She said, there's no kid here. Everything was locked and secured. Who's this kid? Well, here's where things take a twist, all right? Says here that spring rolled around. Eric's lawnmower broke down. Remember the guy next door? The guy next door saw my grass getting high, and he offered to cut it with his tractor. Eric goes on to say, I told him I'd pay him, but he refused. And that's when he repeated that he used to live there. At that time, he was married and had two sons. But one of them died in the house. So they were sitting at the dinner table, and he laughed at a joke, and he got choked. And they took him to the bathroom in the back hallway. But he died before the ambulance arrived. The guy pointed to the windows outside the linoleum room and said that was his bedroom. He then went on to say that that house was so special to him that his handprints and his name or even on the concrete next to the swimming pool. The boy's name was Christopher. In fact, that's why they call that road Christopher Lane. Well, if you think that's the end of the story, it's not. My friend Eric, he got married to his sweetheart he'd known since they were 15 years old. But she moved into that house with him, so things went downhill quickly. The footsteps and the shadows were more active. She kept telling him she thought something did not want her there. She said she had a dream that somebody was trying to kill her. They were only married for around a year, and they split. But no, even that's not the end. So here he is. Here is Eric. He's having this bad experience where he finds out his house is haunted by this little boy. His new bride is having all these terrible experiences, and they split. And now, one night, he decided to go to a Clemson game. Ball game. Says he stopped at his parents' house to watch some movie. He said it was getting late. He says, I was just going to stay there and then go to church with them in the morning. But then he got a phone call. He answered the call, and it was his neighbor. Said, your house is on fire. Eric said, quote, my brother had been staying there with me again since my ex moved out. And I figured he caught a curtain on fire or burnt the carpet, trying to start a fire in the fireplace. Eric rushed over there. He says, quote, the place was burned to the bricks by the time we got there. My brother wasn't even there. My brother was with a girl in Greenville, and he wouldn't even find out till the next day. Eric says all the neighbors were standing around watching it, and the brother of the boy that died in the house was there. He told me he couldn't believe that place was gone, and he pointed at where his bedroom used to be. It creeped me out. That was September of 2006. I don't know about you, but seriously, I just got a cold chill. I know this guy. I verified the story. It's true. I've got one more treat for you tonight, or today, or whenever it happens to be that you're listening to this. One thing I'm going to leave you with on this Speaking of Strange report, but first I need to tell you a few notes. For one thing, I am scheduled to be the guest the first 2 hours on Coast to Coast AM with my friend George Norrie on Thursday, December the 1st of 2016. So I hope you will tune in for that. On the East Coast, the program starts at 1 in the morning, and on the West Coast, it starts at 10 p.m., so I'll be on again the first 2 hours, and I'm going to have cool stuff to talk about, so look forward to that. Next point, the winter is going to be here soon, my friends, and I know you're about to spend a lot of money with the holidays coming up, but instead of buying people a bunch of crap that they're not even going to use, you might consider purchasing a Sunshine Simple solar generator for your home. It is the world's most powerful solar generator for the lowest price, guaranteed. That information and a video that will give you all you need to know is at sunshinesimple.com. Sunshinesimple.com. Next, I want to again remind you that I am now taking early enrollment for my online paranormal courses. And you can do it right now. You can enroll right now and save a lot of money. And we are going to have a lot of fun. And it's going to be live and interactive. And I guarantee you, this is the best online paranormal investigation course in the world. go to joshuapwarren.com in order to find information about the classes. And also, if you want to continue receiving this report and you're not already a subscriber to my free e-newsletter, there's a place to sign up there at joshuapwarren.com. You just put your email address into a little bank and you hit a button. It takes 2 seconds and you're done. And every e-newsletter is written personally by me. It's from me to you. And I guarantee you that there is no funny business. I will never spam you or sell you to some other third party. I pay for the service to make sure that never happens. So, again, you can learn about the online classes. Space is limited, of course. And sign up for the free e-newsletter at joshuapwarren.com. There is no period after the P, joshuapwarren.com. Here's the last thing for you. Here's what I'm going to leave you with. You know, of course, the brown mountain lights are a very popular phenomenon. Brown Mountain is about an hour's drive east of Asheville. It's a place where these mysterious balls of multicolored light have been floating around at night, and nobody can explain what they are, where they come from. Scientists are perplexed. And one of the reasons the lights are so well known is that there was a bluegrass song called The Ballad of the Brown Mountain Lights that played in the Grand Ole Opry and was a big hit on the radio in the 1950s. Tommy Fail actually was the musician who performed that. He sang it very, very well. And I find it interesting how the Brown Mountain Lights inspire so many artists. And just recently I was contacted by a local musician, a singer, and I don't know what all he plays, but a musician who he has created his own new song based upon the Brown Mountain Lights. His name is Jimmy Atkins. Jimmy Atkins. And he sent me an advanced version of this song, and I thought it was just great. And so I asked him if I could have some permission to play some of it for you. So I don't think I'm going to play the whole thing, but I will play a portion of it for you. And if you're interested in purchasing his song as a download, if you go to brownmountainlights.com, I'll have a link there posted for you. So I'm going to leave you with his tune. But folks, I'll continue sending you these Speaking of Strange reports, and eventually I will make a determination on whether or not I'll be able to do the traditional Speaking of Strange radio show. But in the meantime, I will keep sending you these reports. I can't tell you how much it means to me that you take the time to listen to these. I promise I will always try to keep you informed with the latest, greatest, and most interesting breaking news in my weird world. And so I will be sending you another one very soon. Till then, stay safe, be nice to one another, and I will now leave you with Jimmy Atkins singing his song called Ghost Lights. Thanks.
Whatever happened between those trees, nobody seems to know. A flickering fire, a flame in the breeze, leaves fall and rises aglow, aglow. The dancing of torches like birds on a wire, watch as they all fade away. Hovering beacons forged from the fire, or maybe a trick our eyes play. Muddy hills whisper tales from the past, stories from lives gone before. A slave seeks his master, a search party's pack, an ancient race painted for war. I don't care for ghosts, they do nothing for me. Everyone has their own take on the story. But what do they know? Spectators swore to see lights they could not explain. Now centuries later, this misty mount lore mystifies mankind the same. I'm not one for ghosts, they don't do much for me. Everyone that I know.